Hey guys, don't forget to check out the Street Cop Training Conference 2023, April 23rd through the 28th, Nashville, Tennessee. The Gaylord at Opry, what a center, what a place. We have amazing speakers, amazing training, five of the most impactful days of your career. Check it out at streetcop.com. You do not want to miss out. There is a room code available for a discounted room. Sign up now at streetcop.com. 111, 110.
Street Cop.
Hey guys, welcome to this episode of the Street Cop Training Podcast. I'm your host, founder and CEO of Street Cop Training. My name is Dennis Bonino, and today I have with me the legend himself, the man who walks amongst men as a god in law enforcement. Tall, stoic, personable, gorgeous, everything you'd ever want in life as a human being, Zach Miller.
Thank you for that introduction.
I should get a list of like your accomplishments and just read them off every single time. I want to go back to like Little League. You know what I mean? Like if you got an award at some point for like second place in sort of shuttle run in fifth grade, that's cool.
Yeah, I'd probably have to get with my mom and dad and see if they can help me compile that list because those memories are a little fuzzy.
I bet. Anyway. All right. What are we talking about today? We're talking about a few things, but number one is random plate inquiries, right? And the constitutionality of stopping a car after having a legit return that something's wrong with the vehicle. And then the second one was a body cam ruling. Let's go.
Okay. So we had, we got a question recently about a stop that was made. I guess an officer ran just a random plate inquiry. The owner, let's just say owner comes back as with a suspended driver's license and you're unable to tell from your vantage point, you know, anything about the driver. You can't tell male, female, race, age, anything like that. All you know is that car in front of you, the registered owner has a suspended driver's license. Is that enough to stop the car? In other words, is that reasonable suspicion to believe the owner has, or the driver is suspended? And the Supreme Court said yes in Kansas versus Glover from, I think it was last year, maybe 2 years ago. As long as you have no reason to believe it's not the driver. So for example, you can see it's clearly a female, but it's a male registered owner. Then of course we wouldn't have RS. But the court said that it's a reasonable inference to draw that the owner of the car at any given time is the driver of the car, absent, again, some reason for you to think that it's not the driver. So this would be true for suspended licenses. I think it would probably be true if the owner came back with a warrant. Some people have asked about, well, what if it comes back as just not licensed? The owner doesn't have a license from this state. Is that enough? And I don't think that's going to be enough because there's lots of lawful reasons why you could be unlicensed in the particular state that you're driving in. Maybe you're in the military and you're licensed in another state. Maybe you're just passing through that state. But versus suspended, if your license is suspended in your particular state, then you cannot lawfully drive your vehicle, even if you have a valid license from another state. So I don't think that works with not licensed or unlicensed or not on file or some of these other things that might show up. I think the question dealt with the officer did stop the car for suspended driver on a tag return, and he was told that you need to develop either probable cause to believe that that's the driver or find some traffic infraction. And that's simply not the case. And I think when the officer mentioned Glover to, if it was a supervisor maybe that said it, said, well, yeah, we know there's Glover, but our municipal court judge requires you to have PC, okay, or some kind of confirmed reasonable suspicion or some other confirmation of your reasonable suspicion. And that's not how our judicial system works. All judges are required to follow decisions of the United States Supreme Court unless the state judge is following precedent from their own state that's more restrictive. But if it's a decision of the Supreme Court, all judges, especially trial court judges, are required to follow it. Doesn't matter if they like it or not. So it cannot be a rule that in your local municipal court, you have to have PC to stop a car. And we don't follow Glover in this court. Unless your state Supreme Court or state court of appeals has held that the state constitution requires more, then the judge is not allowed to do that.
I have a few follow-up questions to that question because I've heard these in the past, and I think it'd be cool if you answered them. What if it's somebody who maybe the owner, you stop the car, you walk into the vehicle, and you discover that it is not the owner of the vehicle, are you at that point then allowed to continue on with the detention of the driver of the vehicle, compel identification, and conduct a full and complete, according to Rodriguez v. United States, 2015, citing a lot of stuff out of Illinois v. Caballos, 2005, a complete full circle traffic stop?
Yeah, so there's definitely a split of authority of the case in the cases here. There's certainly no Supreme Court case on point. So lower court cases, some courts, and this is definitely the minority view. I know, for example, Texas is one of them because I have been teaching there regularly and I've found a case that says, yes, if you walk up there, if you stop the car for anything, well, since we're talking about suspended drivers, we'll just stay with that. But you stop a car because the male registered owner is suspended. As you approach the car, you can clearly see this is a female driving the car. So you've lost your reasonable suspicion. Can I continue the detention and at least request the driver's license to confirm that she's licensed and doesn't have warrants? Or do I have to just completely end the stop right there? The minority view is that you can continue the stop to at least confirm the driver's license status. So Texas, for example, and I think it's Hart versus State. I could be wrong about that, but there's definitely a Texas case on point that says you can continue the stop for that limited purpose, meaning she's got to give you her ID. You don't have to just ask. You can demand that she identify herself. I don't think that's correct. There is the majority view. Other states have said that, nope, the second your RS is dissipated, that she has to be free to leave. Now, you can ask her for her identification. And of course, no matter which state we're in, we're going to go up there and we're going to tell her what's going on. I mean, we're not just going to stop midway and turn around and walk off and drive away. We're going to explain to her why we stopped the car. It's just whether can I now demand her ID? Texas, for example, you can. Florida is one state that I know for a fact you cannot. And I think that's the correct view, that we have to let her know she's free to leave. But before you drive away, would you be all right with you if I just checked your driver's license status? That's acceptable in any state. And I think that's the correct view. And this can be for any, whatever your RS for the stop was. This doesn't just have to deal with suspended drivers.
Some states actually give you a return on the vehicle when you run a random plate that they may not be an insured vehicle. Mm-hmm. Now we start switching over to vehicle violations. At that point, at random plates, we're allowed to stop the vehicle regardless with a vehicle violation, not just the owner of the vehicle, right, registered owner, the actual vehicle itself.
Yeah. And this would depend on what, see, some states don't have insurance returns. Like I know, for example, in Virginia, we don't get insurance information from just running a tag. It would depend on what is the basis for the return. Is it just showing they haven't registered with that state DMV, their insurance? Has it expired? It certainly could be RS. It certainly could be when the return indicates a problem with the insurance, but you would want to know what your state, what kind of information is being returned when you run it. Now, we had a conversation in Texas when I was there last week, and they get all kinds of different insurance returns. And they've actually got some cases that say, well, if it's returns this, then you can stop the car. But if it's returning dealing with this insurance issue, you can't. So it depends.
Just to clarify for everybody, when Zach says RS, he means reasonable suspicion. And he's using language found in Delaware v. Prowse, was a U.S. Supreme Court case, 78, 77, 76, 79, somewhere around there, right?
79, I believe. Yeah. 79,
where the U.S. Supreme Court ruled that police officer must at a minimum have a reasonable suspicion to effectuate a traffic stop, aka an investigative detention hold, and stop somebody with lawful authority. Is that correct?
Yeah. And a lot of people, that's a good point. A lot of officers refer to it as RAS, reasonable and articulable suspicion. I've just always used the shorter version RS. It's the same thing.
Same thing. What's interesting is courts have also picked up and started using RAS.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's the same thing. I don't know where the decision was to come up with this new fad. Maybe it's the cool kids at the courts.
The Supreme Court has always said you have to be able to articulate your reasonable suspicion. So some courts have just dropped that word articulation right into the term itself. Yeah.
Now I want to offer something from my perspective. And for years I've been teaching about random plate inquiries. And there are certain things that we can do to just kind of quell the whole thing. And there's actually a solution that I'm glad that everybody wants the answer and wants to know what to do. But my suggestion to people is if you are in a crossroad as a police officer after you've ran a plate and making a decision whether or not you can stop it, and you don't know what to do, this is a very simple solution. It may sound taboo. Nobody's maybe said this to you before, but how about find a motor vehicle violation and then confirm or dispel your suspicions of the other side of it? So if you're on the fence of, do I have enough? Do I not have enough? What can I do? After we've clarified as much as we can for you in this short period of time, just you all remember 27 into 25 is a violation. And I would rather stop somebody for 27 into 25, although it seems unconstitutional in your mind, which it's completely constitutional. The question I have for you is, if you think that 27 into 25 is so petty, well, why did they set the speed limit at 25? Right. You know what I'm saying? Like, it wasn't for it to be 27. Right. And you don't have to play this game of what will the judge think? What will this person think? What will that person think? What you have to say is, this is the better option I have constitutionally to affect a law enforcement objective by stopping this vehicle and upholding the law to confirm or dispel my suspicion that the person may be driving the vehicle while suspended. I would rather have that in my corner than, well, I don't know. We ran the plate and it came back to this. And I don't know if in this state we can do that. No, hey, you know what? The guy didn't use his turn signal appropriately. What does that mean? It's 150 feet in the state, or it's 100 feet in the state. He pulled up to the stoplight. He had plenty of time before that. And then he put his turn signal on. That's a violation of turn signal law. So my advice to everybody here is, make sure you're reading your motor vehicle law book as well, because the more you know about that, the more you'll understand of what you can use to effectuate a motor vehicle stop. And I'm not saying go out and harass the world with tickets. I'm saying, as a police officer who's good at stopping crime, we have to be good at understanding what the law allows us to do and work within it. And people think it's nuts that you would stop somebody for such a quote unquote petty violation, but these are some of the best stops that the best cases come out of. I mean, what if I told you, if you stopped that car for that petty violation, that you found a kid who was being kidnapped? Would it be that petty then? Yeah. Right.
And I don't think anybody's advocating just randomly stopping cars going 27 into 25. This is a particular car that has caught your attention for some reason. And you may not have reasonable suspicion of criminal activity, but they're going 2 miles over the speed limit. So yeah, absolutely. It can be a very good investigative tool.
Here's a good one that was brought up recently. And I've actually worked with a couple different internal affairs divisions, helping guide them out of complaints that were unreasonable, frivolous complaints. And one of the complaints was, when the police officer stopped me, he did not tell me of what I was being stopped for. Now, I'm putting courtesy aside and whatever you want to call it. Is somebody under the U.S. Constitution required to tell somebody what they're being stopped for according to the law?
Not initially. At some point, you have a 14th Amendment right to know why you're being detained, but no, not initially. Because there could be certainly tactical reasons why you may not want to disclose that, you know. And there was a post recently where I saw people were debating the, well, you know, I don't tell people why I stopped them until they give me their ID. Or, you know, I don't understand the logic of that. And my response normally is, what does it hurt to tell them? Just maybe that will get them to provide the ID. But no, you're correct. There's no legal requirement that you have to tell them as soon as you walk up there why you've stopped them, putting a courtesy and all that and human relations aside. Legally, right. No, you don't have.
You know, I can understand both sides of the coin. I know that I have had moments in my career when I was younger and I'd say, hey, you're being pulled over for this. If I had your information first, and commonly my response would be, sir, listen, I'm going to tell you everything of the reason I stopped your car, but I do have to get your license, registration, proof, insurance first. And then I promise you, I'm going to explain the whole thing to you. This way, if it becomes a debated, heated argument, it may be the lesser of two evils than having to fight with somebody to disclose their identity. And maybe in the beginning, it might be a good way to reveal somebody who probably or may have warrants for their arrest and trying to hinder their apprehension by saying, well, I don't have my license. They might try to. So there's a lot of different reasons. I'll articulate both sides of why it's good to disclose it and sometimes why it's not good to disclose it. Now, when you say 14th Amendment, do you mean somebody has to know the reason why they're detained or accused? I'm curious about that. When do you have to tell somebody the charges that are being brought against them? Is the summons enough when they say, well, what did I get stopped for? And you say, well, here is the summons. This is what you were stopped for. You are now informed of the reason.
Yeah. I think that could suffice. I just think in the fundamental fairness element of due process requires a person to know why they're being detained by their government. The summons could certainly.
At what point, though? You know what I mean? At what point do they have
to? At some point during the detention.
Even at the end of it, if it's reasonable.
Yeah, at some reasonable point during the detention, they need to be informed of the nature of the basis for the stop. Yeah.
And right. the summons itself would satisfy that burden.
Yes. I think it would be the rare case where that would be when they finally figure out why they're being stopped. But I don't see a legal issue with it. No.
Okay. Just so we're clear, because people are under the impression there's some case law somewhere. And I often say to people, if you have a case and you're arguing your position, just provide me the case. We'd be glad to look at it. But if you don't have a case, and I was just telling a story before, I had a legal advisor, quote unquote, and he was arguing something. I was on a three-way call, but it's such silliness. And these prosecutors cannot understand how the automobile exception works. Essentially, it's a crime in progress. And they're saying to this guy, if the detective responds out, then you've lost the automobile exception.
Not under the Fourth Amendment.
Not under New Jersey Constitution either. Just so we're clear.
Right.
And nothing in our language says that at all. And they just can't wrap their heads into understanding that for us, at least in the state of New Jersey, and I want to repeat in the state of New Jersey, we have the exception up until the point where we have that car being impounded and brought back to police headquarters. Now, again, far majority of the states do not follow that, but we do here. Even though the car could be towable, it still doesn't lose the exception. Until you get it on that tow truck, you have the exigency. And there is no generally in kind of circumstances we're talking about a case of patrol responding and series of events unfolding. And, you know, within 30 minutes to an hour, detectives showing up and discovering all this contraband inside the vehicle. Even if you had time to get a warrant, you're not required to do so in the state of New Jersey, even with people in custody. And that's under the Fourth Amendment as well. You're not required to go and apply for a search warrant. And correct me if I'm wrong, some states do require it once you've limited the accessibility. Is that true?
Yeah. Like I know Pennsylvania for sure.
Well, they've lost it completely.
Yeah, there. If there's no exigency, which is I would think would be rare. You know, other cases, states, Montana, I know, has a very limited automobile exception. Alaska, Washington State. Yeah,
I don't think they have it at all.
No, New Hampshire, I think, has a limited automobile exception. Yeah.
So we can agree that. So everybody knows you're under no legal obligation. Again, courtesy tactics, different conversation. Don't get confused on it. We're not advocating. We're saying if somebody comes forward and says, well, she didn't tell me what I was being stopped for, so I want to file a complaint. The response is she doesn't have to, at least. And she gave you a summons, correct? Well, that was your way that she informed you of what you were being stopped for and what the accusation was against you. Now you have the right to due process in court to bring your accuser before you, whatever it may be, or challenge the state if you found a deficiency in the Law Enforcement Act, correct?
Yes, right.
Okay. Absolutely. Great. Let's go on to your next one.
The body camera one.
Can I just reiterate that when I'm old, I just want to sit around with you and hang out and talk. Like we do that together as old men.
Yeah, well, it'll be sooner than you think, probably.
Don't say that.
Yeah, it'll be here before you know it.
No, stop. Don't say that to me. I don't want to get old, Zach. Look at this. Look at this skin.
You're doing very well for yourself.
Thank you, sir. I was fishing for a compliment there.
Keep it up, yes.
All right. Let's go to the next one. This new case that came out of I think it was Massachusetts, you said, right?
Massachusetts, yeah. I came across this Massachusetts Supreme Court case from 2021. Deals with body cameras. It's the first one that I've seen on this issue. There could be another one out there, but I've not seen one. It concerns recording, body camera recordings, capturing the interior of a house. So what happened in this case, officers were dispatched to a domestic complaint. They go inside, several officers, they do their domestic investigation. I think it's Boston PD. Their policy is they have to have their camera on during the entire investigation. So they do. They end up concluding their investigation. I don't remember if somebody got arrested or not. It's not relevant. They left. And then one of the officers took his body camera footage, downloaded it to a disc, puts it in his desk. And eventually that officer has a conversation with a detective who has been investigating this particular house. Actually, one of the occupants at this house for drug and gang act and weapons violations. So the detective now, who was not on scene with the domestic, had nothing to do with the domestic. He comes across some social media images of his suspect, and he's holding a gun, I think, in the video, and they're trying to find out where he is because they want to get a search warrant for this house where the domestic occurred. So, and I don't remember the exact how this transpired, but the detective gets a hold of that disc from the officer who, when he burned his disc from the domestic investigation. He looks at the disc and he can see in the background in some of the shots, a set of curtains, window curtains that are very distinctive. And he's like, I've seen those curtains before. And he goes back and he looks at his investigation. And sure enough, in the social media pictures of this gang, this gun suspect, there are those same curtains in the background. That leads to a search warrant being issued for that residence where they found guns and probably some drugs. The case goes eventually to the Massachusetts Supreme Court on the issue of the affidavit for the search warrant. Was it based on evidence obtained in violation of the Fourth Amendment? And the Supreme Court said yes. When that detective reviewed that body camera footage for a purpose completely unrelated to why it was taken in the first place, that amounted to an intrusion upon a reasonable expectation of privacy. In other words, it was a search. That act of viewing the camera footage was a search. That itself would have required a warrant in that case. So that evidence was suppressed. It's the interior of it's limited only to interiors of the house. It's not body camera footage on a traffic stop that we go back and view later. A lot of officers, when I posted this, that's absurd. You know, why do we need a search warrant, one, for our body camera footage? Well, it's owned by the government, yes, particularly that police department. So the footage itself is proprietary, but the images that are captured in that footage implicate other people's expectations of privacy. The people who lived in that house have an expectation of privacy to the interior of their house. So there's that aspect. And then, well, what about plain view? What if the officer on scene had remembered those curtains and he tells the detective about it? That's perfectly fine. That's a plain view observation. There's nothing to be suppressed there. So your memory is not subject to Fourth Amendment scrutiny. But the fact that it's a video recording, which can be kept indefinitely, and it captures all these intimate details of the home, most of which you're not going to notice as the officer in there. You're not cataloging all these details when you're inside someone's house. It's kind of like cell phone location data. If you were to do surveillance on someone for 60 days, just for 60 days, follow someone wherever they go in the city and document all of their movements. If you had the resources to be able to physically do that, that's not a search. That's not an intrusion upon expectation of privacy. But if you go to the phone company and say, give me all the cell site location data for this person for this period of time to track their movements or the movements of their cell phone, the Supreme Court has said that is a search. The use of the technology renders it a search because of the detail that could be captured and the amount of information that you can cover, that you can capture in a short period of time. So body cameras is the same thing. So what does it mean? It means that if you're reviewing the footage because of for reasons related to why it was recorded in the first place, you don't need a warrant. It's you just view the footage. If you're viewing it maybe for an administrative purpose, like let's say we got a use of force complaint based on the incident in the house. And so the administration's reviewing it to see if the officers were within policy. Do we need a warrant for that? No, because we're not viewing it to collect information about the inside of the house. We're viewing it to collect information about the officers' actions. So that doesn't require a warrant. But what does require a warrant is viewing it at some point in the future to investigate a criminal matter that is unrelated to the initial reason for being there. And I think that's correct. I think the Massachusetts Supreme Court got that right as a Fourth Amendment matter, and that they decided it under the Fourth Amendment. This was not decided under the Massachusetts state constitution. It's decided as a Fourth Amendment matter. It's not binding in any other state, but I think it's a well-reasoned opinion, and it certainly is an issue that I think is going to come up again in the future.
Sounds similar to the Collins v. Virginia thing with their intention to go upon the property and not an inadvertence.
Yeah, the intent behind viewing the footage is going to be relevant. So the subsequent, what is the officer's intent when he's viewing that footage at a later date? Is it to investigate a criminal matter? And if so, is it unrelated to the reason they were there? Then we're running into some Fourth Amendment concerns where we might search warrant.
let me paint a different scenario. This detective is hot on this case. He's walking past the computer while it's being reviewed and says, hold on, I know those curtains, and sees that. Would that be inadvertence?
Yeah, I don't think that's completely lawful. We don't need to say, don't let me see that. Let me go get a search warrant before I view anything else. No, I don't see that, because the footage isn't being viewed for the purpose of investigating that other matter.
Almost like a plain view at work.
It's like kind of a plain view in your office. Yeah, exactly.
So the turning on of the camera was never the issue.
No.
Right. So leaving your body worn camera on as a department policy still is an acceptable practice. The issue here was retrieving the data with the intention of it being a plain view, which it was ruled that it's not, and using that data to achieve a different law enforcement purpose other than what they were dealing with to begin with.
Exactly. That's thank you for pointing that out. That was actually the first issue in the case, was whether the actual initial recording was a violation of the Fourth Amendment. And the Massachusetts Supreme Court said, no, it's not. When the officer goes in and turns the camera on in accordance with his policy, all he's doing is documenting his plain view observations in areas that he's allowed to be. So that's not an issue. That's not a Fourth Amendment concern of using the camera while you're there.
Right. It's no different than your eyes, right?
Exactly. Just because the camera may capture things your eyes don't notice.
Or your memory won't, maybe not keep, you know?
Exactly. So it's another example of modern technology and how it intersects with Fourth Amendment law. There's still a lot that we don't know how the Fourth Amendment relates to modern technology. We're just starting to see some of these issues.
Yeah. And I often tell people, you know, when you talk about researching case law and new stuff arising, typically now it's coming out with new technologies. That's when you start seeing the Fourth Amendment.
Exactly. Almost all of the new case law where we've never had anything like this before deals with technology. We've had cell site location data, GPS tracking. We've got drone issues that are starting to develop in the lower courts. Now we have body cameras. Yeah, it's all technology, and it's all boils down to the amount of information that can be, that is accessible with this technology, the vast amount of information, and how that intrudes or how it affects expectations of privacy that people have.
Would you say that there could be some real thought into knowing existing case law and making a rational decision based on previous case law and how we're going to address this issue?
Yeah. And I mean, and that's kind of how the court, especially the Supreme Court, approaches it. Well, I should say that's how lower courts approach it. They take existing Supreme Court case law, like with GPS tracking. We had, you know, we had cases in the past that had dealt with that. Cell site location data. There was cases in the past that dealt with like pen traps and other low level tracking devices. So there is old case law that we can try and apply those principles. Like there's California versus Cirallo, which deals with overflight surveillance of a residential curtilage. That certainly is going to come into play in the drone cases. There's existing case law that can certainly be applied to these new technological principles. And we can try as officers and police legal advisors to come up with good recommendations about how we should proceed in these situations. But we won't know until a court of appeals or a Supreme Court takes a look at it.
It's very interesting stuff.
It's very interesting. Yeah, very interesting.
Anything else on the agenda for this fine afternoon?
No, I think that's probably enough to digest for one day.
Yeah, I think you did a phenomenal job. And guys, Zach is teaching all over the country now. Check out streetcop.com. He is everywhere. His classes are quite full, and the reviews after taking his training is phenomenal. It's outstanding. And we're thankful to have you be part of this company. And, you know, I treasure you like the goose that laid the golden egg. So yeah, I actually have a shrine to you here that we all sit around and pray to for about 15 minutes a day before we start our day. That's like incense sticks around it and shit, and play like that typical low key Indian music.
That warms my heart. I'm glad to hear that.
Yeah, you're welcome. Anyway, well, I'll see you, brother. It was great.
All right. Good seeing you.
All right. See you.